Welcome to Punch Card Investing, a weekly show dedicated to all things value investing. Whether it be analyzing companies, pitching ideas, or discussing moves by the best investors in the world, we're trying to get one step closer to punching an investment off of our cards. Let's get started.
Thank you, Intro Man. Although on a less than optimistic news, with the unfortunate passing of Charlie Munger, that's going to be the subject of this episode, sort of a tribute to him and all of his wisdom and previous however many decades. He was an investor and business mind and quite the witty one at that. So with me today is Mike Sharp. We're going to be going over some of our favorite lessons and wisdom or stories that we've come across with Charlie Munger, or things that we think about from time to time. I certainly think about at least a few lessons pretty frequently, just way more than I did even a few years ago. But before we get into that, as always, be sure to subscribe, like, comment, all that great stuff. It helps the channel out a lot. And I know we've been a little bit infrequent on the live episodes over the last months, just been a little bit difficult to coordinate some things, but hoping to get back on the right track with the live episode cadence in going into the new year. So sorry about that for anyone who's been wondering where the episodes have been. We didn't have any in November, but we're kicking off December here with this tribute. But with that said, let's go over the news. If for some reason you missed it, it's been pretty hard to miss if you're into the value space, but it's on Tuesday of this week. On November 28th, Charlie Munger passed away at the age of 99. And looking at the CNBC article here, the right-hand man to Warren Buffett, he was also a real estate attorney, philanthropist, and architect. We think so much alike, and it's spooky, Buffett once said of Munger, although they definitely had their differences in how they maybe delivered some of those thoughts, which is where a lot of the fun stuff comes from. But yes, he passed away at 99. It seemed rather sudden, but then again, however quickly it is, once you reach 99, it's always impressive when someone can live that long and be as active as he was all the way up until the end. Because I was able to attend the Berkshire meeting this past spring, and he was at the Q&A session just as he has been for so many decades, and just munching on peanut brittle the whole way and answering questions for like 6 hours. Just a very active mind, really, even as his physical health kind of degraded, just as anyone's would at that age. So, Mike, I don't know if you had any kind of knee-jerk reactions to the news, or because obviously it was quite sudden.
Well, I mean, my reaction is, it sounds terrible, but it's positive. Like, I mean, this guy did what he loved till he was almost 100, right? I mean, I can only hope to live a life like that, right? He was still so sharp. Mentally, right? And I was just like, basically just amazed at the life he lived, right? And so, like, anybody who lives till 99, that's a great run. So
yeah, whatever you're doing, it's unlikely enough to get to your 90s, but then almost to get to 100 is definitely impressive, even if you don't do anything. And he was doing a lot. So I did notice that I was curious what happened to the Daily Journal company on the news, and it did decline like 5 or 6% on the news of passing.
I didn't see that.
Which I thought was a little bit funny. It's maybe it's something having to do with his shares being unlocked or something like that. But I was thinking, is that a bunch of investors who were really thinking like, we got another 5-6 years of Munger management or something like that? Because he was already kind of passing it on. But I thought that was a little bit funny, given that he is 99 and he had to think it was only a matter of time, unfortunately, because that's just how life goes. But
well, I would imagine there was a Munger premium in there. I would have thought it would be bigger than that, but I guess it's true. But
I guess it was 4 or 5. I just was curious. I don't know if it was any bigger the next day or after that, but on the day I was kind of curious when I was reading through the news. But anyways, his career obviously goes way beyond Daily Journal. That was just his, call it, personal company, but the big stories, obviously, with Berkshire Hathaway and the partnership with Warren Buffett and all he was able to build through that. But he had, it was kind of wild, as he had a whole life before that. He had two call it 50 year lives or so. I forget when he and Buffett met, but it was a long time ago. And even then, he had already had a full career as a real estate attorney, started a law firm, and is still, I think he was still a named partner on the law firm, although he wasn't practicing law by any means by the time he's with Berkshire. But he had a very
full career before that.
Yeah, exactly. A full career and multi-stage sort of approach to all these things in a full second life, if you will, as an investor, and a very long one at that. So that I think is kind of unusual. I guess that's probably the unusual thing with both Buffett and Munger is just how long they've been doing things. And that by itself is like the really impressive part. If you just decouple it from anything else, all the performance, the wisdom, the things they've shared, all that, just the longevity is so hard to beat, because you kind of have to live to 99 to really get there. And that's hard. That's unlikely enough.
I actually think there's a relationship. Like there's no science behind this, but I think that if you're, I mean, one of his lessons is like, do what you love, right? Or do what you're interested in. And I think if you do that, it actually adds to your sort of quality of life and life expectancy and stuff like both of those guys are just, Charlie was a curmudgeon, right? But he was still obviously very happy with who he was and what he was doing, right? And like, I think that probably extended their life a long way.
I would tend to agree there. It's hard to argue against it, because it's certainly not diet and exercise. So,
no, especially with Buffett.
Yeah, well, really both of them. I mean, I don't ever munch on, or Charlie was at least munching on peanut brittle the whole time. And Buffett was chugging Coke during the whole annual meeting. So, I mean, it's not like they're much younger then. So,
exactly.
So, yeah, I think there is a lot to be said there, that just maintaining an active mind and doing something that you do enjoy somewhat, at least. And it seems like they enjoyed a lot. You didn't hear them complain about their jobs ever. And they would often praise it. So that makes a lot of sense. And So I guess what I was thinking for this episode is if we could just go over maybe one or two lessons or pieces of wisdom or stories that you really enjoy or that you think of frequently, or even not that frequently, but you think are really powerful. There's so many from Charlie Munger, but maybe if we get a couple here, I think that would be kind of fun.
Yeah, cool. You want me to go first?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Yeah, for sure. I do have one that's relevant, that's constantly relevant. Like in my office, when I've got the door, and then right at eye level, I've got a piece of paper, and it's got a couple of quotes on it. And just so I see it every time I leave the room, and one of them is "Do less, Charlie Munger," right? And I, you know, like I don't know how many times he said it, but I remember one interview where, you know, somebody's asking why Berkshire outperformed. He said, "It's so obvious. We do less than everybody else," right? And it seems so glib and so like just, you know, but if you dig into it, and if I dig into my own investment history, like if I had just sat on the things I knew were great and didn't do anything, stopped trading in and out and trying to find, oh, I'm going to squeeze 30% onto that one or this, and like I would be way ahead of where I am. Like I'm a bit stupid that I still haven't fully absorbed it, and I need to like look at the lesson every day, right? But I mean, if you look at particularly his track record, like if you look at Daily Journal, like nothing happens in there.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. Every 10 years he makes a move, right? And he's kicking everybody's ass, right? So I think that, and same thing with Berkshire, right? If you take all the Ted and Todd moves out of it.
Yeah. Like the big moves, the material moves that are.
At
least 5% of the portfolio. Those are super rare.
Yeah. And I mean like this is punch card investing, right? That's built on that premise of just do a few things in your life and you'll do really well. Right. And so I think for me, that's the biggest one. It's just like I've been learning that lesson for 10 years. Right. I'm just like,
yeah,
it's not actually great for a YouTube channel, because like on my channel, like I actually have done a lot less this year, and it's like, well, I didn't do anything. Here's an update on Stone Co. It's doing great. I'm just leaving it. Like there's not a lot.
Here's the grass growing, right? Yeah, I hear you there. I totally hear you there. It's one of the weird incentives of being on YouTube and producing content about investing is you want to have activity and stuff to cover. And that's what that's what the major financial media covers is short-term moves, swings, trades, plays, drama. That's very short-term focused because it's very entertaining and. It's hard to steer away from that. So I totally hear you there.
Yeah, it's all like focused. What's happening in the next 1 year? Like that's like probably 95% of like financial media is like it's this very sort of 1 year time frame.
Or
less.
Do less. That's a great one. It's right in line with our brand, like you said, the punch card investing. It very much is that more quality, fewer moves will tend to outperform lots of lower quality moves. So it makes a lot of sense because you get to ride the coattails of the big wins rather than cutting them short. And you also should lower your chances of big losses if you're actually doing the due diligence, because you can now focus your effort on less things. Because everyone has the same amount of time in a day. Everyone has the same amount of time to spend towards things. So if you can focus it on just a few things rather than a bunch, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And there's a couple more reasons too, right? Like, I mean, how many times have you bought something and it's gone down, you go, okay, give up. And then it comes back and, you know, like if you just waited a bit longer, you'd be fine, right?
I did less.
And then the other one is probably the big one is taxes, right? I mean, if you're in a taxable account and you're not, like if you're triggering 20-30% taxes on gains, like that's a significant deficit to make up versus somebody who's not making moves, right?
Yeah, and trading commissions at least in a past life when they were a lot higher than they are now. But just cost of trades is definitely a consideration too. Yeah.
Totally. What about you? Have you got one that jumps to mind? Yeah.
What's kind of weird is really prior to 20, what year are we in now? We're nearing the end of 2023. We would have started this channel in 2021. And I really hadn't given Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett really much of any thought prior to 2020. So I wasn't really looking at stock investing at all. I was really focused on real estate. So I knew some of the kind of the moguls and big dogs there, a la Sam Zell and some of those guys. But I started coming across, especially through like meeting guys like Investing with Tom and Brad as well, and the rest of the Punch Card crew, I really started to dive more into the Berkshire stuff. And just when I started actually reading about Charlie Munger and all of his lessons, and also the similarities just into my own career being an attorney, I'm not saying I'm going to be Charlie Munger, but you know, it's an attorney guy, kind of like Sam Zell. He's also a former attorney, sort of a very short term attorney. But it's interesting to see what kind of path someone can take if you stretch things out for many, many decades, even from a similar beginning. So, a lot of his lessons just resonate so strongly that I think about them all the time. With probably the number one that I think of, like, probably close to a daily basis, especially now that I'm hiring people, but it showed me the incentive and I'll show you the outcome. And it applies to just so many things beyond investing, business, politics, just human nature.
Everything,
whatever
everything.
The incentive is, that's where it's going to go. That's what's going to trend towards. When I'm reading history, like I'm thinking of the incentive structures that set this up, whether the author is trying to lay those out or not. It's just how it articulated maybe a way that I'm kind of wired anyways, but it made it so clear and so much easier to see and understand when he just lays it out like that, which is a talent he had, which was boiling down pretty profound lessons into very simple, catchy terms, kind of like a Ben Franklin might from long ago. But that's probably the single greatest thing that stuck with me right away. And there are plenty of other things too, but show me the incentive and I'll show you the outcome. It goes towards everything. And I think keeping that at the forefront, especially if I'm trying to lead people or hire people and try to keep people aligned, just making that front and center of whatever I'm drafting. Same on the legal side as an attorney, you know, I might be drafting a contract for different parties. What are the incentives here? And trying to make those clear and concise and powerful and aligned in the direction that I would want to go, and not creating perverse incentives as well. It goes in both directions. So I think that's my single greatest one that I think of super frequently from him.
Oh yeah, I mean that's massive, right? I mean that underpins the whole world, I guess. We saw what happened with China when the incentive structure changed with Deng Xiaoping, and they just, you know, everything.
Sure.
All the human potential got unlocked, right? And it was just, I mean, that's a huge example, but
it's a perpetual thing, and it's just a human nature thing. Like And it might even go beyond humans as well as animals as well. If they're you know, incentivized to do something, they're going to keep doing it. If they have any level of intelligence, right. And can put two and two together. So,
with animals, yeah, it's like they have to stay alive. So the
yeah, exactly.
Find the food is the primary thing you do, right?
Yeah.
I think humans like to think we're sort of beyond that, but I don't think we are. Getting that.
So I think that's probably number one for me. But beyond kind of maybe the more, I might call that a tactical or philosophical lesson. You also just have the way he delivered things, which we're kind of getting at, just the wit, total bluntness and everything. It was just always direct and he didn't care, which always made it very entertaining. Sometimes what he said wouldn't really be funny, but it was just how he said it, just cut to the chase, that would actually make it kind of funny. Especially at you notice that in all the Berkshire meetings, he'll just make a little comment that's maybe a little funny, but because just given the context, Warren Buffett just gave a big, long, obtuse answer, like trying to be all careful and tactical, very politically minded, probably. And then Charlie just comes in with like a one liner,
cuts through it,
and it's just the sort of contrast between the two is what makes it so funny. Even though they're really aligned on a lot of things, which is why they had such a successful partnership. But the delivery was just so different, and that's what made it very entertaining.
Well, we all respect people with humility, but the truth is humility is boring, right? And I heard somebody say
that is true.
I heard somebody say about Charlie, one of his friends. She said, "You know, Charlie, when they were giving out humility, you didn't get your fair share, right?" he thought that was funny because he's
that's good, right? Stuff. That's good stuff. Yeah, humility is boring. It's not fun to watch. It'll serve you well in many cases, but yes. Not for entertainment. So it's a good balance to have if you're doing publicly streamed Q&A sessions for 6 hours. Have one guy with less humility than the other, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it's also more like it's more understandable too. Like it's maybe less palatable, but like it's just like you said, he just cuts through the noise and just this is the thing. Just bam. I don't care how you feel about it. Right. And I think I really appreciate when people are like that just generally.
Yeah. I'm curious what do you think his legacy is going to be 20, 30 years from now? You know, once he's passed, I'd assume Warren Buffett would be passed by then too, barring some major medical breakthrough. What do you think the legacy of not Berkshire, because Berkshire will probably still be around by then, but of those two guys, Munger in particular, for this example, what do you think the long-term legacy is going to be? What is he really going to be remembered for, if anything, I suppose, because history is a long time.
Well, I mean, I don't know if what he will be remembered for, but I think what he should be remembered for is he's one of the main influences that shifted Buffett from, you know, value shitco investing to great, wonderful business. Like he was I think he was the main catalyst behind that, right? And I think that he is credited as that, and Buffett credits him. Maybe that's humility too. But like, you know, without that, like, imagine how like there's so many lessons in the investing world that are built on that particular shift, right? Like anybody who's studying investing is studying that mentality that came out of Berkshire. So I think he's a big part of that.
Maybe not anyone, but it's certainly in the world of value investing.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Yeah. But we like to think we're much cooler here over on the value side, right?
So we're actually this little niche over here. Everyone's just traders everywhere. And then there's like us in the corner.
The cool value types would tend to agree. The wonderful business versus cheapness debate. I think it's been more relevant given the market we've been in for a couple decades now of rather expensive, historically speaking, but which might make you focus a bit more on quality than otherwise, because you're paying a lot per dollar earned, historically speaking.
Do you think that relative expensiveness is potentially because of this lesson? Because we all like, you know what I mean?
I don't know about that. I think that might be a bit far-fetched, but it's hard. There's obviously a lot of factors. It's probably one of them. a lot of it is, I would pin on monetary and fiscal policy over the last 20, 30 years. You know, you got a lot of dollars swimming around trying to find a place. Rates historically are very low now. So that's probably, I think, number one. But as for maybe where you might see more of the influence is on the bigger business side. So fund managers, holding companies, larger businesses, conglomerates, that I think that's where you might see more of the lessons kind of perpetuate for a longer period of time. Maybe not so much every single investor in the market, but just a few of the bigger players might kind of orientate themselves a bit differently. In the same way that you had guys like, you know, Graham and Dodd who were doing the cheapness investing, but then you had sort of the new cohort of Buffett Munger and focusing more towards quality. So I thinking about it more, maybe that's it. It's kind of the a select cohort of investors now kind of follow the Buffett approach, or try to at least, focusing on quality and holding. Because you have a lot of funds that are made up half of Berkshire, or some have some huge section of Berkshire as a portfolio, and they try to kind of mimic with some alterations, but mainly because the scale might be smaller. But that just shows you, I think, how the values apply well beyond just Berkshire itself. You have a lot of people trying to mimic Berkshire in a good faith way. They're actually trying to look for wonderful companies. So I think it very well, you could be right there that it's going to be a longer term thing.
Well, it could be a piece to the puzzle. Like, I mean, if we're looking, you're talking about monetary policy, right? We're at like, what, 5% Fed funds rate? Mm-hmm. And Apple's still trading at 35 times earnings with 2% growth. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. I would kind of, like, I guess I attribute some of it, because if you're in the 80s and the whole wonderful business idea hadn't sort of blossomed yet in the world, like, I would imagine...
Well, you have the Nifty 50s idea, right? Or the Nifty
50s. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I think it was kind of by then, because that's when Berkshire really was marching along by the 80s going into the 90s, right?
Yeah.
So,
but we didn't have the Coke example at that point. The Washington Post example hadn't sort of blown up yet. And then we had...
Didn't see the fruits of it until much later, because it's a long-term game. But I think it was kind of really starting to take off then.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I definitely think they have an influence on that segment of the market, the sort of like people trying to find the wonderful business and saying, oh, it's actually worth more than it seems like it's worth because of this compounding effect, right? Mm-hmm. I just think that's a little bit more well-known. Like, even in my investing lifetime, it seems like it's become a more prevalent idea.
I feel like it's kind of a shame, actually, that he, not kind of pivoting points here, but it's kind of a shame that he's just written off as the right hand man to Charlie Munger, like he's, you know, right hand man to Warren Buffett, like he's beneath him or isn't really relevant, is kind of what it feels. He's always second to Buffett, which makes some sense, but he very much was an extremely competent businessman on his own, with or without Buffett. So it always feels like discrediting him, because really before I started getting into all this investing stuff, I had heard of Warren Buffett. I'd only sort of heard of Charlie Munger, and I just knew he was the dude with Warren Buffett, but it always felt like he was some like lieutenant to Warren Buffett. But he very much was an equal in how they ran things, at least as far as I can tell. Buffett was just better on TV probably, but that's about it. And I think that's maybe where the reputation gets kind of soured.
Well, and also I think Buffett spent 100% of his time on this, whereas Munger had a lot of interests.
That might be it. It's more the Berkshire lens. It's like, he's, you know, he's some lesser guy, but he's like, I mean, he's a massive billionaire himself. So it's not like he's some chump.
I agree, but it's probably just due to the, you know, Buffett has the scorecard, right? I don't know what he's worth right now. It's probably
maybe Charlie Munger should have done less. I don't know.
But I think maybe that's where Charlie's humility actually was. Like, he didn't jump up and down and say, I'm great too, right? Like, he didn't do any of that stuff, right? He just would say, Warren Buffett's the best. He's the greatest, you know, listen to, like, he would actually push the credit onto Warren, which maybe that's his humility.
And maybe one of the other legacy items, that's pretty unique to now, because he lived so long, we got to get a lot of, you know, footage of him talking or audio of him speaking, all the Q&A sessions that were filmed, starting whenever they were filmed. That's like a super helpful record to have that wouldn't really have been able to have if he didn't live till he was 99. If he lived till he was 80, we'd have so much less. So that's really nice to have. You can look back on things so much easier now. That's going to be something that all generations from here on have. You'll just have so much more documented evidence. It might become overwhelming and it'll be hard to sort, but it's still there. And maybe that's another legacy item that will be kind of unique going forward now with many of the kind of the investing greats who are nearing the ends of their lives now. It's not like they're going to just disappear forever other than a book or two that they write. There's actual video content of them talking or giving interviews. To mention Sam Zell again, he had an interview like a week or two before he passed. And like that just didn't really happen very often before, but it's just very cool to be able to go back, and now you can go watch what he said a month ago after he passed away, which that just was not very feasible until rather recently. In the last decade or two is where you really start to see that start to come on.
Yeah, there's a lot constant, of content.
Yeah. The constant stream of content. I think that's really awesome that we can go back. It's not like you missed out on everything. You know, you can actually go back and listen to him talk. Of course, it won't be the exact same, but I think that's really powerful.
Oh yeah, definitely. And then in investing, it's like, I mean, I don't know if you find this, Jack, but like I see there's quite a lot of ageism in the world, right? Like, I mean, people, as they get older, they get less sort of respect in a lot of areas, but that doesn't seem to be true in investing, right? These guys are in their 90s. In a lot of industries, they'd be like, oh, these guys are dinosaurs, like, forget them, right? Whereas they still were able to
maintain probably a fair take.
This respect all the way to the end, right? Which I thought was quite cool.
Yeah, and it grew with time as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, can you think of any others that are really like them? Like, no, they run one of the largest single companies in the entire world. They're both in their 90s, which that in itself is unusual. Like having one 90-year-old board member or CEO or manager is super unlikely as it is. But there was two of them. They'd been working together for many, many decades. I forget the year count, but at least 50 years, right? So back in the 50s, right? So when they joined up. 50s or 60s. It might have been 60, but either way, a long time ago, many, many decades together, which that's also unusual. So it's just, you know, one unusual thing after another, you put them all together. That Venn diagram is really tiny. So there are very few combinations that have all those same qualities. And I think that's what made them so kind of mesmerizing. And I have this cult following around Berkshire. I did my pilgrimage to Omaha, and it was cool to be around other people who are into that. And I think it's just because these two guys are so unusual in the grand scheme of investing. And we might not see another one in our lifetime like that, another duo, or even just one guy who's there till he's 99, like performing as they were. It's just so unlikely to have for so many factors.
Well, maybe, Jack, maybe in 50 years, you and me will be doing punch card, and we'll be zillionaires too.
Yeah, yeah. The currency will be debased a good bit before then. So, yeah, we'll be the first deca-zillionaires. Nice. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. But we got to get started pretty soon and get that compounding engine in effect.
Totally. So, Jack, before I forget, can I throw in one more lesson here before
let's do it. Maybe we can wrap up on a final lesson.
Okay, so like I think the main thing I take away from him is just if you look at his wisdom, like if you look at videos of his wisdom, a lot of it is not investing related. Like he was really focused on the character of you as a human being, right? If you create a good character, then your life will be good, right? Basically, and there's this real foundational idea, right? Like I think one of his ideas was deserve what you want.
Yeah.
Right. And just be, you know, that's kind of the golden rule. Be a good human. And like you and me have been in business, and like that really actually pays off, right? Short term, maybe it doesn't, but long term, it really
exactly.
Does.
It's very much delayed gratification. So yeah. I hear you. I think that's good. And I guess one more before I forget, the other one that I think of a lot that goes really directly to that is the inversion principle. I doubt he came up with it, but he'd certainly popularized it. Yeah. And I think of him when I think of inverting, when I'm trying to figure out maybe there's a tough thing to try and solve. And the whole concept of inversion is, okay, take what you want. Say you want to build a great business. How do you build a great business? Well, that can be kind of hard to think about. Like, you don't know what you don't know. Well, okay. How would you build a bad business? Invert it. How would you build a bad business? And yeah, right. It's, for some reason, it tends to be easier to think of what wouldn't work. So at least you can kind of go through that process of elimination. So, you know, trying to build a great business, I don't know how to build a bad business. Well, you know, don't show up on time. Don't use the worst quality items. Don't pick up the phone, customers call, you know, just, you could just go down the list, charge right. way too much for what's given, you know, have a negative experience the whole way through.
Bad quality products, you know, whatever.
Like, I'm just coming up with these as we go.
Yeah, it's so easy, right?
It's pretty easy for a lot of people to come up with the negatives. And then now you have a list of what not to do. It can make it a lot easier to, you know, kind of reinvert it again. Okay. You know, don't show up on time. What's the inversion of that? Show up on time. And you might have a wonderful business at that point. And so on. So that's another big one too. And it goes to that. If you want something, and he says you got to deserve it. Well, how would you not deserve it? And then you do the inversion exercise. So it's a great little tool in the psychological tool belt and trying to problem solve. So I definitely, I credit him a lot for that one.
That's a really good one. And
yeah,
and he did prove that we can be, no matter where we are now, we can still be super rich if we start investing now, right? Like I'm in my 40s, right? I'm like, oh, I can, yeah, I still have a whole.
Yeah, you got 50 years left. Right? To meet him. You got 50 years if you get to the 90s. So yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, it was definitely a long life, a fruitful life, and he shared a lot along the way, which is probably the coolest part. So you actually can hear some of the things he's thought. You can read some of the things he's argued for as well. And so much of it is just very digestible, yet still powerful. And that's just what makes Charlie Munger so interesting. It's a very potent but simple lessons at the very same time, which is the best kind of lessons, the most entertaining for sure. So with that said, thanks to everyone for dropping by. I just wanted to do kind of a quick tribute episode here. Thanks again, Mike, for coming on. And and we'll certainly be talking about Charlie Munger for many years after this, but in varying contexts as we look at different businesses or think about different scenarios, different pieces of wisdom or knowledge that we're trying to accrue as we move along here. And a lot of it can be credited back to guys like Charlie Munger, who really popularized certain ideas or articulated them very well. So we thank Charlie for that, and may he rest in peace. Otherwise, everyone, thanks for coming along. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And until next time.
Thanks for tuning in to Punch Card Investing. The contents of this show should not be used as investment advice or as a recommendation to invest in a particular security. Please consult with a licensed investment advisor if you need investment advice. All investments carry risk and the potential for monetary loss. Thank you, and see you next week.